97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. My name is Bo Matthews alongside Mark Cox and Carl Middleman, our producer of this program. We always want to encourage you to share this show, and you can do that via the Odyssey app. With people that are supporters of the Second Amendment, or they just enjoy getting in the great outdoors. We've got a great show for you today. A couple of guests that is going to be interesting for those that play in their backyard or those that like to go out fishing. We've got a young man who caught a monster fish we're going to talk to in the program. Mark, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing fine, Bo. Thank you. We're also going to talk about pools, because it's Memorial Day weekend. Everybody's looking forward to the pool. Hopefully the water's warm enough for you to get in if your pool's not heated.
That's an issue.
I know. And staffing is an issue this year as well for a lot of these municipal pools, finding enough employees to keep lifeguards on duty, right? So we're going to talk to our friend Doug, who runs Unique Pool Management, about the challenges that he's facing over the course of this summer. After the pandemic, it's unique if you haven't looked at it.
Absolutely, and it's Memorial Day weekend, so I mean, with these cool temperatures that we've had in the last week, kids will have no problem jumping in the cold water of a pool.
No
problem at all. We did it all the time.
Yeah.
But man, when the summer's here, you know, middle of June, middle of July, there is nothing better than just to just go and soak in your pool.
I could not agree more. With a cold beverage in one hand and just kind of forget about it all.
Mark, have you ever owned a pool?
No.
2002, we found a house with a pool, the lanai screen over it so the bugs didn't get you. First day we get the keys, the pool is green as can be. Green pea soup. Did it deter me from jumping in? No.
Oh, man. I've never had to deal with that, but we'll get a few tips for you coming up on some ways you can deal with it. So, you know, the big 2A story this week, no doubt about it, this horrible tragedy in
so
Texas.
Sad.
It is. It's heartbreaking for anybody period, whether you've got kids or not, to look at the young lives that were lost at the hands of a stark, raving, selfish madman who was 18 years old, and Lord knows why he did what he did. I mean, it's just awful. And it turned political before nightfall, the day of the shooting, this had turned political. And it irritates me so much because you're in a situation where did anybody want this to happen? No. Is there anything we can do about it? That's a discussion we can have. But when you've got people like Senator Murphy, I believe from Connecticut, coming out and claiming that we need immediate universal background checks and red flag laws, well, that's your political narrative. That's been a goal of yours for a long time, but it wouldn't have changed the outcome of this shooting, wouldn't have stopped anything. That's maddening to me, Bo.
It is to me as well. 19 children, two teachers in Uvalde, Texas. What my mind went to shortly after just the devastating news of this, Mark, was the first responders that came in and took out the shooter, but then what they had to see. What yeah. they had to witness and what they had to, investigate. And I can't even imagine what that looks like. And we've been hearing about, how the Ukrainian government has been handing out firearms to anybody that will stay and fight with no training at all. And yet, a lot of those firearms are from us as supporting that fight overseas. But it comes down to people that have firearms, that have access to firearms. You and I both agree on background checks. There's no doubt about it. This guy had obviously some mental issues. I don't know if he was on medication. Of course, that's not going to surface anytime soon. They're going to hold that information. But that truly is evil, and evil lurking right here. And it's happened. It just happened in Buffalo at the grocery store.
And notice the different narrative there, Bo, not to jump in, but
yep.
in Buffalo, it was a race narrative. In Buffalo, it was a white supremacist narrative. That can't be the narrative in Texas because you had the kid that did the shooting was Hispanic. So instead, we immediately jumped to it must be the gun. It's not the white supremacy here. It's the gun.
It's not the mental illness.
It is the mental illness, though. But that they don't care on the left. And they start to argue we need tighter gun laws. This is why I loved what Governor Greg Abbott said during his news conference this week. I thought he made a great point. Go ahead, Carl.
And I know people like to try to oversimplify this. Let's talk about some real facts. And that is, there are, quote, real gun laws in Chicago. There are, quote, real gun laws in New York. There are real gun laws in California. I hate to say this, but there are more people who were shot every weekend in Chicago than there are in schools in Texas. And we need to realize that people who think that, well, maybe we just implement tougher gun laws, it's going to solve it. Chicago and LA and New York disprove that thesis. And so if you're looking for a real solution, Chicago teaches that what you're talking about is not a real solution.
Amen. Amen.
Wow. Well said. Yeah.
And well said and well couched. And it's a hard truth. But for all of these people demanding more gun laws, that wouldn't have fixed this. It wouldn't have fixed what happened in Newtown. It's Sandy Hook. It wouldn't have fixed what happened in Buffalo. It didn't fix what happened in Parkland. It didn't fix any of that. In a lot of those cases, the guns were stolen. In this case, the gun was purchased legally. But if you tell me you want to ban long guns from all 18-year-olds, we better raise the ability for anybody to enter the military to 21. Because a lot of 18-year-olds won World War II on the beaches of Normandy. So how do you put in blanket rules like that and think that's going to be the thing that fixes this?
You know what, Mark, I had this conversation with my wife, actually. I said, you know what, if they confiscated all of the guns in this country, which will never happen, it would be another weapon. It could be a vehicle. It could be, and we've seen that. We saw that at the Christmas parade slaughtering. It's just so bad. Evil is going to lurk, and they're always going to find a weapon to do something like this. But we have surpassed 200 mass shootings this year, and to Governor Abbott's point, Chicago surpasses that almost every weekend, and St. Louis ain't far behind that either, which is very sad because it's all about greed. It's all about evil. And then you have the mental illness issue, which I believe this 18-year-old did down in Uvalde, Texas. There were pictures on his social media that, you know, he was dressed as a woman in a couple of different pictures. And, there was obviously something going on. How come we haven't heard about his parents?
Yeah.
Heard about his grandparents?
Not much. I mean, his mother had a drug problem, according to one story I read. So I was living with his grandmother. And
sure.
I saw those pictures, too. And then I saw stories that said that wasn't him. I don't know. That clearly, to do what he did here, he had mental issues. There's just no doubt about that. But you know what I would point out, Bo, is that I was a reporter for many years in local TV news. Back in the early 2000s, I traveled to Spring Independent School District near Houston, Texas. So probably several hundred miles away from where the shooting happened, they had hardened their schools. When somebody wanted to come into one of their school buildings, they did this district-wide. You had to walk in. There was only one entrance in. You entered into a vestibule. There was a bulletproof glass window where you stated why you were there, and then you had to hand him your ID. If somebody walked in there with a gun, there was nobody for them to shoot. There was no other way into the school. If we can spend $40 billion sending arms to Ukraine, we can harden our soft targets with our precious children and them right here in America.
And that's without even bringing up the subject of arming teachers. I love that idea. Because our children are precious.
Yes.
And we need to take care of them.
It's a matter of priorities.
It really is.
Where is the national priority here? That's for sure.
Just a very sad story.
Well, I tell you what, coming up here, we're going to introduce you to a man who's going to have his hands full for the next 101 days. He runs a pool management company, maybe the one in your neighborhood. I don't know. But we're going to talk to him about ways to take care of your pool and some of the challenges of finding employees in this environment right now, in this economy. How about that? You're listening to Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. like some pool music, Carl.
Absolutely, it
you
is.
You think?
Yeah.
It could be. I don't know. Welcome back to Second Amendment Radio and the great outdoors, which means over the Memorial Day weekend, it's kind of officially the kickoff of pool season in most places. Unless you have your own pool, you're kind of waiting for the neighborhood pool to open up or the municipal pool, and this is the big weekend for that. Bo, you just go swimming in the lake when you're hot, right?
Well, you know what? I used to swim laps in my lake.
Yeah.
Until my nipple got bit by a fish and I was done with that. So it's true. I used to swim laps with my dog, and he was a horrible swimmer because he was a boxer, but I had a life vest for him.
Yeah.
And he and I would just go back and forth and back and forth. And then one day, boom, I got hit. And I was like, okay, I got to do something different.
I told you not to put the piranhas in the lake.
Don't stock yeah, right. the lake with piranha.
Why did you do that? Yeah, I'm not a big lake fan, but I love getting to the pool every once in a while. That's a full-time job if you own one or if you happen to manage them. And right now we have Doug Schaefer on the line, and he is the president of Unique Pool Management. Doug, great to get you on here, my friend. How are you?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm good.
Absolutely. And husband, we should mention, of the one and only Denise Schaefer. So
that's right.
Thank you for giving us a little bit of time this morning. We love
sure
Denise around here.
This was a hard get.
we had a hard time getting this guy's phone number. Well, it's a hard get this time of year, probably because you're so darn busy, right?
That is correct. It's very, very busy around here.
Give us, not to jump in on you there, Bo. Sorry. Give us an idea, Doug, the scope of what you do at Unique Pool.
Being the president, I kind of do everything around here because we're a very growing business. You know, we started 6 years ago and, started out with just commercial management, and now we're doing a lot of residential. So I wear a lot of hats and help a lot of people just because we have a lot of new people that we've been hiring on and training. And as we grow, that's kind of what I do.
And Doug, do you also build pools as well or no?
No, we pretty much do everything but new construction. So
gotcha.
We'll get involved with some renovations. So if someone has an existing pool that's, you know, a little dilapidated, you know, maybe hasn't opened in years, we'll get involved with those kind of projects, but we won't do any kind of new construction.
Interesting. So I don't know about Bo. I've never owned a house with a pool because I'm smart and I have friends that have houses with pools.
That is a good idea.
So I'm just wondering, you know, if you're maybe you've got any advice for people just based on what you see at residential pools in terms of the new technology that's out there for keeping them clean. And
sure.
What is that? Is the trend salt water these days? Is that easier
it
to
is.
Take care that, of?
I like salt water. It's what I push. It's very easy for the homeowner. Very kind of set it and forget it is what I say. They're very nice. UV is very popular. I don't do as much with UV, but on new construction, they're pushing that a lot. Really, it's just about anything you can do to get away from the old tab chlorine.
Yeah.
You know, no one likes that feeling of getting out and, you know, your skin's dry and you kind of stink like chlorine. And, you know, everyone likes that salt feel, and the ease of it, obviously, with technology, you know, managing the chemistry. It really is nice to have something like a saltwater pool.
And it's easy
to convert. I mean, that's the thing is one thing that people don't understand out there is, you know, they hear the word saltwater pool and they think it's something special about the pool itself. And it really doesn't have to do with that. It's about putting something on the equipment side and then adding salt to the pool. So it's a little confusing for people that never have heard it. They think it's more of like how the pool was built, but it really has to do with just adding equipment to your existing pool.
Yeah, is it expensive?
It can be, but to be quite honest, in the long run, if it's something you're going to have for, you know, 5 or 10 years, it's actually cheaper than a traditional tab chlorine pool. I think the break point that people talk about is maybe 4 to 6 years when you start to actually save money over tabs. But with the way tab prices are right now, that might even be sooner than later. I mean, tabs are getting more and more expensive every day, too.
Man, that's so true. That's so true, Doug, because I go to I have a hot tub, right? My thought tub, mm-hmm. I call it. But I went in to get chemicals. And they said, you know, the chemical prices are going up so much higher. And so is salt water compared to chlorine, is it a cheaper endeavor or no?
Yeah. And the reason it's cheaper, so salt itself is really cheap. I mean, you can buy salt at Home Depot for, you know, $7 or $8 a bag. The initial adding of salt is not super expensive. And once you put salt in a pool, it's not going anywhere. And so in the process of generating chlorine, It's a cycle. So you break down the salt into sodium and chloride, and that's where your chlorine comes from, is the chloride. And when it reacts with bacteria and whatnot, it goes back with the sodium. So the salt never leaves. You're able to basically kind of generate free chlorine is kind of the way people describe it. Now, it costs you a little bit of power, but it doesn't cost you chemical. You know, once you have it in there, it'll stay in there. Now, if you lose water for, you know, various reasons, splash out and stuff like that, you'll have to add a little bit of salt, but very, very minor. You know, so that's why it's cheaper in the long run, because, again, you're not having to add chlorine every single day. It's you get it set up, and that's, and then you just add a little power and it goes.
Well, you know, part of my background, Doug, I've done a little bit of everything, but as a, you know, as a parent, you end up getting involved in whatever sports your kids are involved in. And I used to be the president of a local swim club. And I'll never forget, because we had to use the school district pools. The challenge was we had maintenance people who didn't quite understand the importance over a long holiday weekend when school was off about keeping up with the chlorine. And we'd come back after a long weekend, or the maintenance guy happened to be on vacation for a few days, and the pool would be green. Right.
Sure.
So what we finally convinced them to do was to go to the UV system. And it cost a little bit of money to upgrade to it, but there were a whole lot of advantages, right? Because for people that have maybe have asthma or breathing problems, they're also not dealing with that layer of smell that you get off the top of a chlorine pool if you're in there swimming laps.
Yeah, I mean, the more consistent you can get with your chemical killing is also better. You know, that's always what plagues people when it comes to the older systems, is when it has a lot of hands-on application, then you might get high chlorine levels one day and zero chlorine levels the next, and that's never good. You really want to get a consistent system, whether it's on a commercial pool or a residential. And that's, you know, on residential, something like a salt system. On a commercial pool, we use more of like liquid chlorine, but we use pumps that, like a peristaltic pump, that'll pump in the same chlorine every day, whether someone touches it or not.
Yeah.
And so you get consistency, and consistency is very important when it comes to chemistry on a swimming pool.
Yeah, you know, the one thing that comes to mind is, you know, swimming as a kid, which, you know, this weekend, Memorial Day weekend, is the greatest weekend ever because the pool's opening up. But let's talk about opening your eyes underwater. As a kid, I can do it. As an adult, I can't. Is there a different effect on your eyes in the salt compared to the chlorine?
Well, so, you know, the red eye thing is something that always gets people when it comes to pools. You know, you hear someone swimming in a pool and they go, man, my eyes are burning and the chlorine's getting me. And what people don't realize is actually what mostly causes bad irritation to your eyes is the pH. And so an ideal pH in a swimming pool is like 7.5. And the reason that's ideal for a swimming pool, it's not because that's the best pH to kill bacteria. It's actually the chlorine's more effective at a lower pH. But it's because your eye, that's the pH of your eyeball, or right really close to it.
Oh, wow.
So when the pH is off, then typically what we find is probably the chlorine's off too. So it's not that, you know, you probably smell it. They probably have high chlorine. Then their pH is all wacky. But the reason your eyes are burning is because the pH is off, and it's probably really low. And you basically, you're swimming in a little bit of acidic water, and it's just irritating your eye. But they, everyone always associates it with chlorine, but it's really probably more of a pH issue.
And it doesn't mean that somebody peed in the pool, right?
No, typically no.
You have to ask, right?
It's not that they didn't pee in the pool. It just means that's not what's causing that problem.
Oh, my funny. God. We're talking with Doug Schaefer, who's the president of Unique Pool Management, because this is it. I mean, this is the big weekend, the big grand opening for neighborhood pools and a lot of municipal pools and stuff like that, which means you've probably been working some 12 and 14-hour days, right, Doug?
It is, and then on Saturday we start the countdown. You know, there's 101 days in the summer, and so, you know, we have our countdown to Saturday, and then once Saturday hits, we start counting the other way until we get to September. So for us, it's 101 days of the summer that we try to keep these things open and clear and blue for everyone to have a good, enjoyable summer.
You know, Doug, I got to tell you, I've known Mark here for a couple of years now, and he said, oh, it's great to have somebody to, you know, that owns a pool that you can just go enjoy it. People think about the same way about boat owners, having
True.
A friend with a boat
or a
camper. but some of my favorite memories are in, you know, going to my dad's and in his apartment complex. I remember because that my parents split when I was 7. We'd go, and for 2 solid weeks, we'd spend all of our time in the pool. I do want to ask you about Unique Pool Management. So you said you do commercial, the big Olympic-sized pools, but are you doing residential, like somebody can hire you to make sure their chemicals are right?
Yeah, we do both. So we have about 300 lifeguards that work for us, you know, at 40 or so commercial, like, you know, homeowners associations or golf clubs, things like that. And then we also have a residential side. So, you know, if someone doesn't want to take care of their pool, they can hire us to come out and once a week clean it, check chemistry, do those kind of things. And we kind of do everything in between. You know, some homeowners just want us to open it and then they manage it themselves. Or, you know, some people want a total hands-off experience. We offer anything in between. You know, so we'll do whatever it takes to get someone swimming in their pool. So.
Like lifeguards?
That's the one thing we don't do. There is a company out there that'll do backyard lifeguards. That's actually a pretty popular thing.
For parties.
So if people have parties and they want to, you know, be able to enjoy their party themselves, but know that the people that are there at their house are going to be safe. There are companies out there that will hire backyard lifeguards, essentially.
My guess is this is probably, maybe last summer beat it, but it's got to be one of the most challenging markets in a long time to keep employees and to find them in the first place. And I only mention that because, you know, I'm not in charge of my neighborhood pool or Unique Pool would be managing it. But with the company that is, we've already been told so far they've only found one lifeguard to work at our neighborhood pool. And because of that, they're having to limit hours on when our pool can be open. Now, how do you deal with that when you need 300 people?
It's tough. You know, I mean, we start hiring people back in November. Obviously, we start with our staff from the previous year and try to bring them back. And we have a big referral program between our old staff to try to find new people. And we're just constantly advertising and trying to find new people. We offer our own certification. So we might, depending on the area, might give someone a free Red Cross certification to come work for us.
Oh, yeah.
We have all kind of different incentives to try to get people. And it's a battle for us from now until the end of the season. You know, it's we'll never have enough lifeguards. And so we're always on the hunt. It's a great summer job. I mean, for someone who's 15, 16, 17, or even someone who's going through college, it's a great job because, you have the summertime, you have your job, but then you know when school starts back up, you don't have to worry about quitting because we're pretty much done. You know, so you can go back to school and do your thing. So, And it's a good fun job, you know. I mean, people get to work with their friends. They're out in the sun. They're at the pool. What could be more fun than that?
Well, I've got to believe that in the pandemic era, so many people were appreciating their backyards if they had one, and a lot of pools have been installed or even above ground pools. And I'll be honest with you, I live in the woods, so we bought like the $129 13-foot wide pool. You plug into the wall, not a big deal. But it's just a way to Mark. This is not rich people problems.
No. I'm just envisioning you out there in the, you know, in your skivvies, hopping in the pool out in the woods.
Well, it's really for my wife, but no, I just wanted to say that, you know, a pool is a great respite. It's a great place to go to just to chill out, whether you're out there in your skivvies, like Mark just described. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good
so
stuff.
So my point is it's a good business to be in for you right now.
Yeah, I mean, the pandemic definitely... it didn't hurt the pool industry because, you know, with no one being able to take vacations and leave, a lot of people really put money in their backyards and, you know, had their staycations, as they call them. So, the pool industry has been growing in the last couple of years because of that.
Well, Doug, you I don't know if you need more business or if you got your hands full, but give people a way to get a hold of you down at Unique Pool Management in case they're in need of help with their pools.
Yeah, I mean, the best way is to go to our website, and it's just uniquepoolmanagement, all spelled out, .com. Or if you just search us on Google, you'll find us. And there's a ton of information on there, too, stuff about saltwater. So if someone has, you know, curious about what it takes to, you know, convert to a saltwater pool or how it works, that information's on there. Or if someone wants to apply to work for us, They have a 15 or 16 year old that wants to work. We run pools all over St. Louis County, St. Charles County. We pretty much have pools everywhere. So they can do everything through our website. That's the best way to get a hold of us.
Makes it easy. Hey, Doug Schaefer with Unique Pool Management. Thanks for your time today.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Yep. Give our best to Denise. Right. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. All right. Great getting Doug on here. Bo, what do you think, man? You ready to go swimming?
Almost. I haven't gotten set up yet. And I'm not really going to be swimming. I'm going to be just floating. Probably.
Oh, you just he's a floater.
Full disclosure. This segment of Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors brought to you by Razorback Armory, your gun concierge. They're right there in De Pere. Stop in for a knowledge base you will not find at any gun store besides Razorback Armory. Start your journey. Get directions. You can even make an appointment to go have their undivided attention at RazorbackArmory.com.
Well, you know, one thing you're not going to find in Bo's lake in his backyard is a record size fish. We're going to talk to a guy next who caught a huge fish. He's from the Metro East. We're going to get him on next on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. Welcome back. I tell you, I'm still stuck on the swimming pool in Bo's backyard. I'm going to start calling him Commando Bo.
It's a lake.
Well, that's been used before.
Not the first time that been called that. Okay, that's funny.
You have room in your backyard, Mark, for one of these above ground pools, don't you?
My backyard's kind of sloped. I've got one little flat area. We got a kids' play system back there, but I don't know that I'd have enough room for something that big. I think I'd have to build it up. I could put it in the driveway.
Put it right in the garage.
We just fill up the kiddie pool and lounge in it at my house.
Yeah. Well, let's go from freshwater to, freshwater, but bigger water. This next guest on Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors is a young man who caught a huge fish. And of course, on this program, we love to hear these stories because we all want to know how to catch one of these huge fish. And so we invite Gavin Stukenberg. He's a teenager from the Metro East who caught this huge fish in Missouri. Welcome to Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors.
Gavin, are you there?
Yes.
Hey, sir, how are you, man? Good to have you on.
Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. So, Bo Matthews and Mark Cox here, and it's great to meet you. And just tell us the story. Often I understand people catch sturgeon accidentally. Tell us about the fishing trip and what you were fishing for when this happened.
All right, so I was out, and I was using my heavier gear to go out and just try to catch some carp for capid bait. And I thought I was snagged at first, and then just started swimming off, and it's a fun fight, but yeah.
Go ahead, Bo.
So this thing was gigantic. Your record, your personal best that you've ever caught of any fish?
Yeah, this is.
And have you ever done noodling for a catfish?
No, I never have.
Yeah, you will someday, I'm sure. Tell us about the uniqueness of this fish, though, because it's not all just meat. There's a whole lot going on there. You got a lot of eggs, possibly, right?
Yeah, they're an endangered fish in our area, and they're pretty rare, and it was full of eggs. And, yeah, they put a tag in it, DNA sampled it, got official records on length and weight, and then it was released.
Yeah. I mean, so tell us about the fish itself. How big was it? You said you thought you'd snagged at first, and then all of a sudden it started swimming.
Yeah, it was 5'7" and 87 pounds.
Wow.
That's a person.
Yeah, you snagged a person. Yeah, a skinny person, but a person.
Yeah, it was a big one.
So, and were you alone in this fishing trip, or did you have help to get this thing in?
My mom was out there with me, and the people that tagged it were already out there doing research on them, so they were kind of right there.
Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty cool. By the way, you don't sound 14, does he, Mark?
No, not at all. I wouldn't have figured that at all. That's but what an experience to have at your age. I mean, have you caught anything close to that? I mean, there's some pretty big carp and catfish out there too.
Yeah, I'd say the closest thing I've got to that is on the Illinois side, I caught a 55-pound blue cat, but that's really about the closest I got to it.
That's amazing.
Wow. Yeah, I've got some grass carp in my little pond here that I swear like 4 feet long, and they're just like submarines. When I feed the catfish, they just kind of emerge. And I've caught them. They're fun to catch, but I put them back because they've got work to do by cleaning up my pond. Is this the normal place you go fishing?
I fish there a lot, but this is my first time I've been there in a while. So.
Yeah. So, Gavin, tell us a little bit about what it was like to haul this thing in. You know, we had somebody on from the Department of Conservation, I believe maybe on our last show, and he was talking about people snagging these and that it's becoming more common when people are out fishing for catfish or something, they end up hooking into a sturgeon. What was that like compared to, let's say, that 55-pound catfish?
It felt way harder. They dive to the very bottom, and they'll just pull your drag until you're out of line.
Were you worried at any point that about losing it, or what was that fight like?
Yeah, I was really worried about it getting into this tail current out there. It's really strong, and if the thing gets anywhere near the current, it's gone.
Wow.
So, this world is built on fish stories. Did everybody believe you when you brought this back to school to talk to your buddies and say, you ain't going to believe this? Of course, you had a picture of it.
No, they didn't. I had to show them a picture.
I'll bet. So here's the interesting thing that I found about this. So she weighed in at 86 pounds, the fish, 76 inches, almost 30 inches around. So according to the Missouri Department of Conservation, this fish would have been 45 years old. I mean, that's amazing. And
wow.
and pretty clearly wild-born fish, they believe, because the Missouri Department of Conservation didn't start stocking lake sturgeon in the Mississippi River until 1984. So, you caught a pretty unique fish here.
Yeah, I mean, it's a rare catch, and we got to be able to catch it. It's been on my bucket list for a while to get one of these big lake sturgeon, and I didn't think it would happen that day, but it did.
That is so cool for you. Gavin Stukenberg is our guest, a teenager, 14 years old from the Metro East, caught this huge fish in Missouri. And you know, it's really cool that you have this passion at such a young age. How long have you been fishing, Gavin?
Since I was one.
Nice. Snoopy pole and all.
With the Spider-Man rod.
You got some pretty serious gear now, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think that's fantastic. Listen, Gavin, we appreciate you giving us some time today, and congratulations. That is maybe the catch of a lifetime for a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Gavin Stukenberg there, who caught an 86-pound sturgeon.
So cool.
You just never know what you're going to catch.
And well spoken too.
Oh, very much so. Yeah,
great. I'm impressed. When you find somebody that's passionate like that, they can just go on and on and on. But to go back to his buddies and say, guess what? You ain't going to believe this.
You know, Bo, I have to ask. You ask him how long he's been fishing, and he says since he was one.
Yeah.
I don't remember how early I started fishing, but I do remember specifically getting one of those pocket fishermen.
Yeah.
Little things that
Opeels.
Opeel pocket fishermen.
Yeah.
Where you would snap the rod out, uh-huh, and the thing had a little reel on it, and it probably wasn't 18 inches long total, and you could carry it with you in your back pocket, mm-hmm, or whatever. And I remember having one of those as a kid, fishing all the time with it.
Gazillions off of those.
Oh, yeah.
That was his mom, Jen, in the background, and she was coaching him and saying, "Oh, you remember, we got you a real thing when you were one."
Well, he did very well composed for a 14-year-old to get him on the radio for the first time, and he did a great
natural
job. Yeah.
And hopefully motivates people by listening to this program to get your own kids out there fishing. It's a great pastime, and heck, you may catch a lunker like Gavin did, and we could be inviting you on to Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors.
What's your personal record, Bo?
You know what? It's not size so much as it was numbers. In Minnesota, we fished for bullheads, which is okay. Very similar to a catfish. I don't even know the difference, but we called them bullheads. And we caught about 200 in one day.
What?
It was, and they were all about 4 or 5 pounds. And we just kept, you could throw a bear hook in and they would jump on it. And we were just pulling them in, pulling them in, pulling them in. And it was a wonderful day fishing. You know what the worst part was?
Cleaning them. Oh, I'll bet.
It was the worst.
It
was the worst.
So is it a type of catfish? Is that what a bullhead is?
Yeah. I mean, it's got the same tines and everything. But Carl, you know about them, don't you?
Yeah, I know a couple of them.
Yeah, I caught a sailfish one time. I don't know if I've told you that story, stop me. But I just have a warning for everybody listening to this story right now. I was in Mexico, off the coast down there, in of Cancun, off the Isle de Mujeres is where we went and took the boat out. And I take my son.
Island of Women.
Yeah, the Isle of Women. And he was, my son was little. He was about 6 years old. And suddenly we go out of sight of land on this boat with a captain that didn't speak English. Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. Welcome back. I tell you, I'm still stuck on the swimming pool in Bo's backyard. Now I'm going to start calling him Commando Bo.
It's a lake.
Well, that's been used before.
Not the first time that he's been called that. Okay, that's funny.
I'm sorry. You have room in your backyard, Mark, for one of these above ground pools, don't you?
You know, my backyard's kind of sloped. I've got one little flat area. We got a kids' play system back there, but there I don't know that I'd have enough room for something that big. I think I'd have to build it up. I could put it in the driveway.
Put it right in the garage.
We just fill up the kiddie pool and lounge in it. At my house.
Well, let's go from freshwater to, freshwater, but bigger water. This next guest on Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors is a young man who caught a huge fish. And of course, on this program, we love to hear these stories because we all want to know how to catch one of these huge fish. And so we invite Gavin Stukenberg. He's a teenager from the Metro East who caught this huge fish in Missouri. Welcome to Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors.
Gavin, are you there?
Yes.
Hey, sir. How are you, man? Good to have you on.
Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. So, Bo Matthews and Mark Cox here, and it's great to meet you. And just tell us the story. Often I understand people catch sturgeon accidentally. Tell us about the fishing trip and what you were fishing for when this happened.
All right. So I was out and I was using my heavier gear to go out and just try to catch some carp for catfish bait. And I thought I was snagged at first. And then just started swimming off. And it's a fun fight, but yeah.
Go ahead, Bo.
So this thing was gigantic. Is this your record, your personal best that you've ever caught of any fish?
Yeah, this is.
And have you ever done noodling for a catfish?
No, I never have.
Yeah, you will someday, I'm sure. Tell us about the uniqueness of this fish, though, because it's not all just meat. There's a whole lot going on there. You got a lot of eggs, possibly, right?
Yeah, they're an endangered fish in our area, and they're pretty rare, and it was full of eggs. And, yeah, they put a tag in it, DNA sampled it, got official records on length and weight, and then it was released.
Yeah. I mean, so tell us about the fish itself. How big was it? You said you thought you'd snagged at first, and then all of a sudden it started swimming.
Yeah, it was 5'7" and 87 pounds.
Wow.
That's a person.
Yeah, you snagged a person. Yeah, the skinny person, but a person.
Yeah, it was a big one.
So, and were you alone in this fishing trip, or did you have help to get this thing in?
My mom was out there with me, and the people that tagged it were already out there doing research on them, so they were kind of right there.
Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty cool. By the way, you don't sound 14, does he, Mark?
No, not at all. I wouldn't have figured that at all. That's but what an experience to have at your age. I mean, have you caught anything close to that? I mean, there's some pretty big carp and catfish out there too.
Yeah, I'd say the closest thing I've got to that is on the Illinois side, I caught a 55-pound blue cat, but that's really about the closest I got to it.
That's amazing.
Wow. Yeah, I've got some grass carp in my little pond here that I swear, like 4 feet long, and they're just like submarines. When I feed the catfish, they just kind of emerge. And I've caught them. They're fun to catch, but I put them back because they've got work to do by cleaning up my pond. Is this the normal place you go fishing?
I fish there a lot, but this is my first time I've been there in a while. So.
Yeah. So, Gavin, tell us a little bit about what it was like to haul this thing in. You know, we had somebody on from the Department of Conservation, I believe maybe on our last show, and he was talking about people snagging these and that it's becoming more common when people are out fishing for catfish or something, they end up hooking into a sturgeon. What was that like compared to, let's say, that 55-pound catfish?
It felt way harder. They dive to the very bottom, and they'll just pull your drag until you're out of line.
Well, I mean, were you worried at any point that about losing it, or what was that fight like?
Yeah, I was really worried about it getting into this tail current out there. It's really strong, and if the thing gets anywhere near the current, it's gone.
Wow.
Wow. So you know, this world is built on fish stories. Did everybody believe you when you brought this back to school to talk to your buddies and say, you ain't going to believe this? Of course, you had a picture of it.
No, they didn't. I had to show them a picture.
I'll bet. So here's the interesting thing that I found about this. So she weighed in at 86 pounds, the fish, 76 inches, almost 30 inches around. So according to the Missouri Department of Conservation, this fish would have been 45 years old. I mean, that's amazing. And
wow.
and pretty clearly a wild-born fish, they believe, because the Missouri Department of Conservation didn't start stocking lake sturgeon in the Mississippi River until 1984. So, I mean, you caught a pretty unique fish here.
Yeah, I mean, it's a rare catch, and we got to been able to catch it. It's been on my bucket list for a while to get one of these big lake sturgeon, and I didn't think it would happen that day, but it did.
That is so cool for you. Gavin Stukenberg is our guest, a teenager, 14 years old from the Metro East, caught this huge fish in Missouri. And you know, it's really cool that you have this passion at such a young age. How long have you been fishing, Gavin?
Since I was one.
Nice. Snoopy pole and all.
With the Spider-Man rod.
You got some pretty serious gear now, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Well, oh, yeah. I think that's fantastic. Listen, Gavin, we appreciate you giving us some time today, and congratulations. That is maybe the catch of a lifetime for a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Gavin Stukenberg there, who caught an 86-pound sturgeon.
So cool.
You just never know what you're going to catch.
And well-spoken, too.
Oh, very much so. Yeah.
I'm impressed. When you find somebody that's passionate like that, they can just go on and on and on. But to go back to his buddies and say, guess what? You ain't going to believe this.
You know, Bo, I have to ask. You ask him how long he's been fishing, and he says since he was one.
Yeah.
I don't remember how early I started fishing, but I do remember specifically getting one of those pocket fishermen.
Yeah.
Little things that
Opeels.
Opeel pocket fishermen.
Yeah.
Where you would snap the rod out, uh-huh. And the thing had a little reel on it, and it probably wasn't 18 inches long total, and you could carry it with you in your back pocket, mm-hmm. or whatever. And I remember having one of those as a kid, fishing all the time with it.
They made gazillions off of those.
Oh, yeah.
That was his mom, Jen, in the background, and she was coaching him and saying, "Oh, you remember, we got you a real thing when you were one."
Well, he very well composed for a 14-year-old to get him on the radio for the first time, and he did a great
natural
job. Yeah.
And hopefully motivates people by listening to this program to get your own kids out there fishing. It's a great pastime, and heck, you may catch a lunker like Gavin did and We could be inviting you on to Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors.
What's your personal record, Bo?
You know what? It's not size so much as it was numbers. In Minnesota, we fished for bullheads, which is very similar to a catfish. I don't even know the difference, but we called them bullheads. And we caught about 200 in one day.
What?
It was, and they were all about 4 or 5 pounds. And we just kept, you could throw a bear hook in and they would jump on it. And we were just pulling them in, And it was a wonderful day fishing. You know what the worst part was?
Cleaning them. Oh, I'll bet.
It was the worst.
Is it a type of catfish? Is that what a bullhead is?
Yeah. I mean, it's got the same tines and everything. But Carl, you know about them, don't you?
Yeah, I know a couple about them.
Yeah, I caught a sailfish one time. I don't know if I've told you that story, stop me. But I just have a warning for everybody listening to this story right now. I was in Mexico, off the coast down there in Cancun. Off the Isle de Mujeres is where we went and took the boat out. And I take my son.
Island of Women.
Yeah, the Isle of Women. And he was, my son was little. He was about 6 years old. And suddenly we go out of sight of land on this boat with a captain that didn't speak English very well. And I started second guessing my decision to do this day because the water was getting kind of rough,
you
right?
You never know.
And, you know, here there's four other passengers on there. It was like Gilligan's Island. I was getting a little nervous. At least I could see other boats. So they decide they'll let my son go first since he's the smallest kid on the boat, and he snags a dolphin fish.
Okay,
not like Flipper, but one of those. It's got the bull head on it, kind of the flat nose dolphin. It was beautiful, probably 8 or 9 pounds. I mean, I helped him reel it in. He was very proud. We got pictures. I get in the chair next, and I hooked a sailfish.
Oh,
and the captain got really excited, and it through the language barrier, we figured out it had been like 5 months since they'd caught it, hooked a sailfish. He was very excited, and then you're seeing it breaching the water, and you know I'm reeling it in, and I'm getting it close to the boat, and the guy says to me, "Do you want to mount it?" And I'm like, I'm torn, right? I'm like, well. Yes, I think. He said, well, they're no good to eat. He got that point across to me. So if you don't want to mount it, we're going to cut it free when we get it up to the boat because we don't want to kill it if you're not going to mount it. And I'm like, Yeah. You know, you're puckered at that point. You're like, yes, I do want to mount it because when am I ever going to catch something like this again? And it was 80 some inches long.
Wow.
But they're very skinny fish. So I don't know what it weighed. I don't remember weighing it. And I come to find out that all they take from that fish when they mount a sailfish is basically the bill, like the spear on the end of its nose. The rest of it was plastic.
What?
And they told me that they had to ship it off to Florida to get it done. There was a big delay. They told me it would cost me about $300 or $400 to get it mounted.
Was that a lie?
That was a lie.
Uh-huh.
I put a deposit down that day of $250. But the time that fish got to my house, they had to crate it. The cost to crate the fish and ship it to me was equivalent to the amount I paid down, which was $250. I paid over $1,200 to get this fish to my house. It now hangs in my basement. My son took it to college when he went to college. There's all kinds of pictures of various women's clothing hanging off of the fish at college. And my wife gives me grief to this day over how much that fish cost me. And really the only part of it that I had anything to do with was the spear.
The nose.
And the rest of it is solid plastic.
Oh, my gosh.
So don't ever fall.
That's highway robbery.
I know it is. You could go buy one and claim you caught it a lot cheaper than that.
What you learn
here? Garage sale. Go to a garage.
Second Amendment Radio.
Right, but in the moment, though, Mark, you thought I'm going to tell the world I'm going to have this on my wall for the rest of my life, and it's plastic.
I wanted to put it over the fireplace. The wife was having none of it. So anyway, that's my word of warning. That's my big fish story, and I've still got it to prove it. But I don't know in the end if it was worth $1,200.
I'm going to go with no.
No.
But as many times have you told the story, yes, it is.
I've gotten some mileage out of it. I'll have to admit to that. Yeah, that's it.
Wow, that is crazy. That is crazy that you only keep that little tip of it.
Absolutely. Have a great Memorial Day weekend.
Absolutely. To you as well, thank you for listening to Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors. Carl, hope you have a great holiday weekend as well.
Pew, pew.
We'll love you, boys. See you next weekend.
Big shot.
Get more at 971talk.com.